This is the BCA Podcast, the outreach arm of Beards Creek Adventures, and your weekly source for all things faith, family, and stewardship. We're your hosts, Charlie and Mike Culkin. Join us each week for interviews, discussions, laughs, and encouragement. We hope you guys enjoy the show. Welcome back to the BCA Podcast, and this week I have a friend of mine from a local friend who is a, I'm not even sure what you would call yourself, a farmer? Or
yeah, I like to use the term like micro-farm.
Micro-farm, okay. Yeah. So Tim Brick, he's a micro-farmer, and we're going to find out what that is. We're getting ready to start thinking about gardens, and there's an interesting push in terms of self-sustainability and growing mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And I thought, boy, I got to find somebody who's good at that. And you and I have had a lot of conversations. I thought, Tim's the guy. So
yeah, well, I'm no expert, but I have some experience. Yet.
Yeah. Well, you're a lot more of an expert than I am. So, Tim, tell us a little bit about what was your background? What's your growing up, and how did you even get into, you know, all this stuff?
Well, I did grow up on a dairy farm. We milked, I think it was like 70 cows. And at one time, I think, the idea was to eventually take over the farm and whatnot. And I went to Cornell University, studied animal science and agricultural really? Business. At that point, I definitely wasn't ready to go back to the farm. Wasn't 100% sure that's what I wanted to do. And I went to work for a company called Cargill, mm-hmm. and I was selling feed to dairy farms and beef farms. And this was in eastern New York. I had a territory that covered like Delaware County, Schoharie County, all the way down to like Suffolk County, New Jersey. It was a pretty big territory, but there was a lot of smaller farmers at that time. And I was selling feed, and I was on the road a lot, and eventually decided that wasn't for me doing sales and being on the road all the time. It gets pretty lonely and it's a grind, and decided that wasn't for me. So came back to the farm, but pretty much at that time I decided that, the dairy farming wasn't going to be for me, because what I learned in Cornell was you either go big or go home. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to borrow millions of dollars to milk cows. As you can see with the farms around here now, like probably wouldn't be milking cows anyways. We probably would have sold to somebody else, as we see with the big farms. There's like we just talked about, there's two big farms just this year that are selling out to other big farms.
Yeah.
So I went to go work for Pioneer Credit, local collection agency here in Perry. And I was there for a little over 21 years.
You're kidding me. It was that long.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then because of COVID and some, political policies that were passed, my industry and my department was no longer needed. Mm-hmm. And so they let us go. And it was 400 some people that were all let go out of that. So my last day was December 31st of 2022. And so then, you have to think, like, what are you going to do? Like, right. This is all you've known. I made pretty good money there, so trying to find another job that was going to pay the same amount right away obviously wasn't going to happen. And I just did some soul searching, and I thought, we kind of have this farm thing going on the side, and we've been doing it for, 10, 11 years or whatever it was, just growing mostly lettuce and different things and selling on the farm stand and, real more of a hobby versus a business. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I got the severance package. I'm getting unemployment. Let's see if I can give it a go and turn this into a business. So I spent all of 2023 being a micro farmer. And to kind of explain to the audience what that is, I think we all know what big farms are.
Yep.
So micro farming is being very intensive on smaller plots of land to grow, mostly vegetables, and it's a lot of you know, flipping your beds and, like I said, be very intensive, you know, probably planting things a little closer than you normally would and mm-hmm. getting started normally than you normally would. And like with us, we have the high tunnels. So yeah. that allows us to get started in March when, you know, most people can't even start until May. And then we can continue growing and harvesting crops all the way through, you know, I mean, I was picking lettuce in December.
Wow. So. Jeepers.
So that's kind of, in a nutshell, how I got here and where I'm at.
Well, that's cool. So that's a little bit of a journey then to, you know, to go into collections and to now be back in the high tunnel. So,
yeah.
All right. So there was something you mentioned in there, high tunnel.
Yeah.
Is that what we've always called, like, just the generic greenhouse?
Well, the biggest difference between a high tunnel and a greenhouse, and sometimes high tunnels, they call them hoop houses or whatever. A greenhouse is usually a fixed structure, mm-hmm. usually has, you know, like a concrete base. They're usually heated. Where a high tunnel, that's directly right on the soil,
yep.
and we don't have heat. And okay. we can move the high tunnel around. Like, it's not locked in. You just lift them up and you can slide them. And you know, it takes a lot of work because they're big and heavy, but yeah, right. they can be moved.
And the wind doesn't, like in the winter, doesn't take them.
Yes. not every winter, yeah, but yeah. Usually what happens, the plastic starts to degrade. Mm-hmm. You start getting some tears. And it's usually the month of March when we have the heavy winds, and it'll just kind of catch that high tunnel in a hole in the plastic just right, and it rips off all the plastic. 2 years ago, it lifted one of the high tunnels up in the air and slammed it into a second high tunnel.
Oh, no.
And so it destroyed two high tunnels at the same time.
And by March, you have stuff planted out there. Oh, man.
Yeah, actually, that time that happened, that was in December, which, you know, normally we don't have to worry about. Like I said, it's usually end of February through March. Well, if we can get through March without too much damage, then we're in good shape.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one, so like all last year, we were putting together the tunnels. Like, yeah. you know, yep. we had one to use to begin with.
Yep.
So now we have two. The third one is still under construction because it's just. It's one of those things you work on it when you have time.
Yeah, yeah. Is that, do you orient them to the wind as well? Is there an orientation or to the sun maybe? I don't know.
Well, yeah. So that's what we've done is we've moved them so that they go east to west because mm-hmm. the wind comes from the west. And that just creates less surface area for the wind.
Yeah.
But, you know, you try to block the wind as much as you can. Like the one high tunnel, we park one of our... grain wagons in front of it, mm-hmm. and that just blocks the wind
enough to
keep it safe. And when we rebuilt this new one, we visited some other people that have high tunnels to see what they do to secure it down. Mm-hmm. And so we took old fence posts and pounded them in the ground on each corner, yep. and then attached the high tunnel to the fence post. So, you know, they're not going to move now.
Yeah, yeah.
It still doesn't protect the plastic to be tore off, mm-hmm. And that will happen. You know, because the plastic, you know, most of them are certified for like 4, 5, 6 years. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, to save money, you try to push it. And
but. So it's not like you're taking Saran wrap or clear plastic bags. It's like a plastic that's specifically designed.
Yeah, it's 6mm poly.
Okay.
Yeah, yep. It comes in big rolls that are about 100 feet long. And
really?
Yeah. Wow. And they're heavy.
Wow.
It takes a couple of guys to. Put the plastic on.
That's cool. So then inside the high tunnel where you're planting, do you have beds or raised beds or what do you?
Yeah. So I've last year I've converted and I'm still converting because it takes a while to do it all, but converted everything into permanent beds mm-hmm. instead of planting directly in the soil where you know, there's lots of weed seeds, and every time you till it up, you're tilling up more weed seeds, and you're just fighting with weeds all the time. With the permanent beds, I basically covered all the ground with a couple layers of cardboard, mm-hmm. and then I made rows of 30-inch to 32 inches of compost, mm-hmm. and then like 15, 16 inch rows of wood chips in between. So we have some walkways.
Oh, cool.
And those beds are permanent. We don't till them anymore. Everything's done with, you know, like with a broad fork and a rake to, mm-hmm. to if, you know, if we need to really kind of break it up and make, you know, just a softer bed to plant in.
Yeah. So then that cardboard that you put down first is that decomposes, right? So yep. that becomes compost as well.
Yes.
What are you, how many years can you plant before you have to put more compost in or bring in more nutrients? Or
I usually bring in more compost and amendments between every planting.
Oh, okay.
So as soon as I crop out a bed and before I, you know, put in the new seedings,
yep.
then, you know, I put, you know, I have a fertilizer mix, which I should have probably brought my formula and I didn't even do that, but it's got a, you know, a lot of different things in there, organic material. And then of course the compost that we make ourselves.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I refresh the bed every single time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the cardboard, the main thing you do for that is that gives you a head start on weeds, right? Okay. It just kind of keeps the weeds underneath the cardboard. They can't grow up through it. You know, even if yep. they do start to grow, there's no sunlight, so they die out.
Yeah.
But then you do eventually get some weeds, but you're already ahead of them, so it's so much easier to weed the beds right, and, right. and not have too much of an issue with weeds.
Yeah, that's good. Do you, so... Now I'm losing my. I had a good question. I thought it was about that idea of. I lost it. I can't believe I lost that question. But it was something to do. I'll come back to. I'm sure. Okay. It was. Oh, I know. You've said we make our own compost.
Yeah.
Well, it's the cows that are making your own compost, right?
Like you're right. So we have a few of our own beef cows, and then we board some for a neighbor.
Okay.
And yeah, we just take the. You know, some of the manure,
yep.
especially during the wintertime when you can't really spread
it. Yeah.
And we just pile it up. And, you know, in the summertime, I try to turn it once or twice a week,
yep.
you know, and it just eventually breaks down into a nice, yeah. nice compost. Probably if I fail anywhere, I don't really cover it. So it gets rained on, which mm-hmm. may wash away some of the nutrients, but it's one of those things where, you know, when you're strapped with time,
sure,
right? Covering yeah, and uncovering yeah. the compost, you know, 2-3 times a week is just one extra job. So,
and you're working full time in addition to this now, right?
Now, yeah. So I did figure out in 2023 that I, even though I did build the business and it, mm-hmm. you know, we basically doubled or tripled our production, it wasn't enough to pay all the bills.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
so for the time being, I am working full time and I'm still going to continue to. Do the micro farm, scale it back a little bit. Mm-hmm. I did invest in some tools and equipment that increase efficiencies. For example, when I would transplant lettuce, that was all done by hand. You just basically, you know, you mark out, you know, four rows. They're like 6x6. Mm-hmm. And you stick your finger in the ground, put a hole in there, put the plant in, and you just go down through the bed. And, you know, it would take me 4 to 5 hours to transplant.
Oh, man.
You know, and I was doing that every week. Well, I got the paper pot transplanter.
Okay.
And now I can transplant twice as much in about an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're so, kidding me that yeah. quickly. Wow.
Yep.
So we probably ought to really go through what the process looks like. So start us with like the first of the year.
So the first of the year is when I start onions.
Okay, yep. that early.
Yeah.
Yep. And are you starting them in the high tunnel at that point?
No, we start them indoors under grow lights.
Okay. Yeah,
because it's just too cold. Even with the high tunnels in January, it's still going to freeze in there. It'll warm up during the day when the sun comes out, but it freezes overnight. so we start onions like first of the year. I might even experiment and start them earlier next year. And that's the thing people say, like, how do you get your onions so big?
Yeah.
It's like, well, number one, get the right variety.
Okay.
Right, because you need a long day onion here.
All right.
Because there's long day and short day ones. So. Okay.
And what, like, I mean, we're not talking like Vidalia or, I mean, sweet, what are we talking about?
Yeah, but, you know, usually I grow a variety of yellow, red, white onions, and then why am I drawing a blank? Shallots. Mm-hmm. Grow those. So, but yeah, you want to get those started early indoors. And then, like, I'll probably transplant them this week to put them outside. Probably you can, with onions, you can do them basically by the 1st of April, but it was so wet this year that we kind of had to hold off. So, and then I start lettuce like the second, third week of January. And then I can transplant those, you know, the first, second week of March. Wow. In the high tunnels.
Wow. So now I think you and I've talked about this. That's not like leaf lettuce or romaine, or is it?
Yep. So I do a variety of leaf lettuces and romaines. I don't do iceberg.
Right.
Iceberg is...
That's what we talked about. Yeah. That head lettuce is like the ugly stepchild of...
Yeah.
The
Iceberg is tasteless and nutrientless. Like it's just, it's just filler, you know. So I do a variety of, you know, like oak leaf and bib lettuces and reds and greens and quite the variety. Yeah. But I do romaine. It's a pretty decent seller. I have some restaurants that like to buy that. And then the regular green leaf lettuce that's good for, you know, put on sandwiches, things like that.
Yep. Okay. So you plant those like the second week of January?
Yep. We start them indoors. Yep.
Wow. And they're tiny seeds, right?
Well, I use pelleted seeds.
Okay.
Yep.
What is...
So it just has a coating on it, so it's like the size of a little bead, you know, and you do that because lettuce seeds are tiny, and to start those, you know, with your fingers, like you're going to get more than one or two seeds in a spot. So with the pelleted, you can control to have just one seed for each cell.
So now you don't have to go back and thin them, and you're not wasting seed doing that.
Yeah.
Wow. Is that like available to just the normal consumer?
Yeah, I get all of my seeds from Johnny Seeds. It's out of Maine. They have a big website, and you just order what you want on there.
Wow, Johnny Seed. Okay, yep. I'm taking notes because my wife. I asked her if she wanted to come. She's busy doing other stuff, but she goes, "I'm definitely going to listen because she's just getting ready to start planting." And
yeah, and now even to start seeds, I have a contraption that comes with the paper pot system. Mm-hmm. And it's a big flat tray. You put the seeds in there, and there's like little pockets. Each one seed will go into each one, and then you push this little lever, and it drops them all right where they're supposed to go into the paper pot tray. So again, where it used to take me 3-4 hours to start lettuce, now it takes me 45 minutes. So. Again, that's why I invested in those tools and equipment so that, you know, I can work a full-time job and maintain what I was doing.
So you're starting them indoors.
Yep.
And I suspect like down in a basement or something?
In our old milk house.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's cool and dark?
Yeah, it's cool and dark, but of course we have the grow lights and they're all on timers. So they turn on at 7 in the morning and turn off at 7 at night or whatever I have it set to. It might be 6 to 8 or something. I can't remember, but
And they're able to get everything they need just from that grow lights.
Yeah.
Okay. So my wife, we started stuff last year. She didn't this year, but she felt like because we had grow lights in our basement, just a couple that she bought online somewheres, and the basement's moist. It's cooler. It's like 50s or whatever a basement, an old house basement is. But she felt like the moisture was actually a problem. But I'm not sure that
it could be depending on how damp it is. But, you know, for the most part, if you, you know, put a fan down there to create some, you know, just keep the airflow going, you should be fine. But, you know, if it's too moist, you can get mold problems and things like that. But, you know, if it's only 50 degrees, that might not be enough to get them to germinate. Okay. So, you know, we have heat right in the milk house, and we keep it at about 65, 68 degrees. Hmm.
So. Yeah, they would germinate, but they seemed like they were blanched or white kind of thing.
Might not have enough light or might be have the light too far away. Like our lights are only, you know, 6 inches from the plant, you know, so it's nice and intense.
Okay.
And like ours isn't anything special. We just bought these, like you would call them like, you know, shop lights that we got at Home Depot.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
So they're not the fancy like grow lights that the marijuana growers use.
Yeah, you want your micro farm to succeed. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, yes, many people have said, oh, I know what you need to start growing.
Okay, so now you then transplant, right, into the high tunnel. And you got to transplant each of those, but you now have a system that
does Yeah, it's that a paper that. Pot transplanter. You just throw the tray onto the paper pot system, and you start pulling the chain of paper pots, mm-hmm. and then you just drag the paper pot behind you, and it just... It makes a trough yep. and then covers the lettuce back up for you. And
it does all of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not 100%. Sometimes you have to go back through and you know, help cover some of the roots. But,
yeah.
I would say, 85% of it's doing it all by itself.
Yeah. So I don't even know how to tell people how much lettuce you're planting. Like in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, he's doing a... 5x10 garden or something, but that's not what you're doing.
Yeah. So right now, let me do the math on it to make sure I'm not lying. So it's 266 plants per tray, and we are doing 5 trays at a time. So it's 1,330 plants.
Wow. And then you'll stagger those so that they're harvestable at different times throughout the summer.
Yeah, right now on a 2-week schedule, every okay. 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yep, so I have 3 plantings in, so there's, what is that, almost 4,000 plants in the ground already.
Oh, man, that's significant. So then do you, how long do they go before you can harvest? Like when can we expect fresh lettuce?
Maybe this week.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
That soon.
Yeah. So that, I mean, right now there's enough out there. Like if I wanted to make a salad for myself,
yeah.
I could go out there and pick a few plants. Probably not enough for me to harvest to start selling, 50 bags a week yet, but it'll be there soon.
Wow.
And we'd be there now, except for after the first transplanting, we got that real cold snap in March, yep. and yep. we don't normally get that cold.
Yeah.
And it just puts everything in suspended animation.
Okay. So it didn't kill it. It just suspends it.
Yeah, it just pauses it basically. Yeah.
Wow. And then, do you do any planting then outside of the high tunnel, or is everything in?
Yeah. So, like this week when I transplant, that'll be outside.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, the high tunnels are full.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. Lettuce is very cold hardy. So, April's a great time to plant lettuce outside. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a grass, right? I mean, you got to mow your lawn, right?
Right.
So, I mean, lettuce is the same way. Yeah. Lettuce, spinach, those types of leafy greens, they're very, very hardy.
Yep.
And again, we'll just keep rotating that out. And then once I crop out the high tunnels, I'll actually put peppers and tomatoes in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because those are tropical plants and they want the heat. So yeah. when it's July and it's super hot in the high tunnel, tomatoes and peppers love it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. Like I knew that, I mean, they flourish in the summer, but I didn't realize you'd be able to put them in the high tunnel all summer. That's pretty yeah. wild.
And the high tunnels are nice. We have overhead doors, just like a garage door on it. So you can open that up and you can get equipment in there if you need to. And then the sides roll up. So all summer, it is open. It's still covered in plastic, but the sides are rolled up so you get airflow, and we leave the garage door open so you get more airflow.
Yeah.
And what's really nice about the high tunnel, especially for tomatoes, is you really want to control the amount of moisture that they're getting. Mm. And outside with the rain, you don't have a lot of control.
No.
It's either dry or, it's soaked.
Yep.
And tomatoes can do very well when it's dry, but what happens is if they get too much water when it's been dry, then they suck up all that water and put it into the tomatoes when the tomatoes aren't quite big enough to absorb all that water, and that's why you get cracks and splitting and things like that.
Really?
So when the high tunnel, I can control how much water it's getting and just get a better product. And of course, with tomatoes, you've had the tomato blight, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that comes from the ground, and it gets on the tomato from the rain. splashing dirt and that fungus onto the plant.
Huh.
So when it's in the high tunnel, I can prevent that from happening.
What do you use to water then in the high tunnel?
So we have a drip irrigation system.
Okay.
So each bed has 3 to 4 strips in it, depending on what we're planting in there. And then you just turn the water on and it slowly, irrigates the water into the soil. And the nice part about that is if you leave it on a little too long, it's not going to hurt anything.
It's not going to hurt, right.
If you leave it on all night, like I've done before, it kind of makes a mess.
Wow. What is, how do you tell, these tomatoes need water or these peppers need water?
I just stick my finger in the soil. Yeah. And that tells me, and that's what you need to do to really determine how much moisture is in the ground, is not look at the ground, but dig into it.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of times the ground can look very dry on top. But you dig, 2 or 3 inches into the ground and you see it's very dark and moist and that there's enough soil or there's enough water in the soil.
Huh.
And, you kind of, when you watch your plants, they'll tell you if it needs more or not.
Very scientific. Stick your finger in it.
Well, I mean, it's basically the easiest way to do it is, because the roots know how to do their job.
Yeah.
They know how to get the moisture out of the soil. So you just need to make sure that the soil has moisture. And if it's, if it's dry, you water, and if it's not, then you can wait.
Yeah. Do you have to stake your tomatoes then?
Yeah, so I string them up, which is nice with the high tunnel because you have, things to tie to, and then I just use these tomato clips, and you clip them up, and they just kind of climb up the string, and that's what holds them up. You need to make sure you use pretty heavy-duty string because tomato plants get pretty heavy and they'll break them. Yeah.
And so they're essentially just growing up that string then.
Yep. You go in there as it gets taller and you just clip another part of the vine up through the string. And then, of course, you want to make sure that you're pruning the lower leaves and stems because, again, they'll lay down on the ground.
So I was going to ask about you said you prune them. I've seen videos where they take is it all the bottom leaves off of them?
Yeah. You just work your way up through, and then obviously you want to identify the branches that are just leaves versus ones that are going to produce fruit, and obviously leave the fruit one. So,
how do you identify them?
It's pretty easy to tell. Like, they'll have the flowers on the end of them.
Okay. All right. Yeah, there was I saw a video this last week. I was going to ask you about it, and they pruned them. And then, but they had tipped the tomatoes back.
Yeah.
And so all those places where they pruned were covered over, and it ended up giving them a much larger tomato plant than what you normally would.
Yeah, I've seen that before, that process too. Yeah, I haven't tried that yet myself. No.
And you think, okay, you have the main part of the plant, right? The main stem of that tomato, and if you're going to bury half of it, that would give me concern a little bit.
Well, what happens with on the main, what they call the leader of the tomato, like anything that's underground will create roots.
Yeah.
So if you lay that down and cover it, that all will create more roots
in
there. So, and that's why, like, when you transplant tomatoes, you bury it deeper than you think you should.
Right.
Because, like, everything that's covered with the soil will eventually start roots.
Okay. And then do you start your tomatoes and peppers indoors
yep.
too?
Yep. I started them a couple weeks ago. Maybe 2 weeks ago now, I think. Yeah. And with peppers and tomatoes, they're still indoors.
Yep.
And still under the grow lights. And when they get a couple weeks, I'll pot them up into bigger pots.
Okay.
And I found a lot of success of doing that before you transplant, potting them up at least one time before you transplant versus going for directly from your starting tray to the ground.
Yeah. Any idea how many tomato plants you do?
Last year was 75.
Wow.
This year won't be as many. This year it's going to be, I think, 24.
Okay.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Again, still a lot, but scaling, scaling back a bit.
Yep.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Might be 48. I'm trying to think how big that tray is and how many I did.
Yeah.
But
Are they all like, I mean, is it a beefsteak type tomato?
Yeah, so I have one beefsteak variety, and then the San Marzano, or however you say that, that's your, if you're going to make tomato paste, tomato sauce, that's okay. your, like Roma tomatoes.
Yes.
Yeah, like that. And then a whole bunch of varieties of the cherry tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I got red, yellow, and orange. And then this year I have these two varieties. One's like a black with green swirls in it.
Really?
And another one's like an orange with yellow and green swirls in it. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Our cherry tomatoes just seem to explode. Like, it looks like, are we going to get any? You get one or two that ripen. And then, you know, the next day you've got 60 that are all ripened. And we're like, how are we going to eat all these? What are we going to do with them all?
Yeah. Well, then that's the thing, you know, for most like families, you know, if they're gardening, like one to two cherry tomato plants is probably enough.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And any more than that, you're going to have more than you need. And then as far as like, if you're going to be canning tomatoes, mm-hmm. rule of thumb is usually like one tomato plant per member of the family.
Huh.
That's
great information. I would never have, like, I just wouldn't have said, a plant per family member. I would have thought like, a plant will give you two jars of tomato sauce or something, but
yeah.
That's a great way of putting it. One per person. Yeah. Are there plants that can't be planted near each other? Like, do tomatoes and peppers do well near each other?
Yeah. I haven't had any ill effects of, you know, co-planting mm-hmm. plants. There are some things out there where it's like, don't plant this with this, or, you know, like cucumbers and tomatoes or whatever. I haven't had any issues doing that. I know, like, when it comes to like your brassicas, like your broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, kale, things like that, you know, they can attract the flea beetles. Mm-hmm. So sometimes having too many of those in the same spot, like, I guess like arugula is another one. Mm. Like, you plant arugula, it attracts the flea beetles early, and then if you have your cabbage next to that, then the flea beetles move right over.
Yeah. Do you grow all of that stuff?
Yep.
Do you start that as well?
Yep. All the cabbage and broccoli and stuff, that's all started indoors.
Your milk house has got to be huge, or it's got to be full.
Well, so not as full as it used to be.
Right.
Because with the paper pots for the lettuce, it's just so much more compact, mm-hmm. right? Like, I have 266 plants in the same spot where I used to only be able to do 72 plants. So it's not as full. And then, like, we do have a greenhouse, a small greenhouse that I take plants out to outdoors to get some mm-hmm. sunshine before we transplant them. So I can utilize all that space as well.
Right. Man, you're busy. Just to manage all of that is just, when they're in the barn, in the milk house, do you have to water them by hand, or do you have irrigation? Okay.
Yep. And that's, you know, I just usually have a bucket full of water right there, and you take a, you know, like a 4-cup, mm-hmm. you know, measuring cup, and, you know, just pour it in the bottom of the tray. And that's how I water everything, is it's a two-tray system.
Okay.
Right? So you put the water in the bottom tray, and it soaks up through the holes in the top tray. And you know, that's the best way to water. Watering overhead, you can damage the plants, especially if they're small. You can splash a lot of your soil away. So
Yeah. Man. Do you do carrots?
Yes. Yep.
Those are small seeds as well, it seems like. And we always end up having to thin those out too.
Yeah, even with the seeder that I have, it's supposed to plant at a good spacing, but it doesn't. You still have to go in there and thin those out.
Yeah.
But carrots are really tricky. Never did a lot of them before mm-hmm. because we just didn't have a lot of luck.
Right.
And what I discovered was they take so long to germinate that you really have to water them, like daily until they germinate. And I figured that out, and like, just had a hell of a crop of carrots this last year. Like,
really? Just from the difference of watering.
Yeah. You know, so that was, and what I've seen a lot of people do is they water the carrots heavily and then they'll put a 2x4 over the row of carrots.
Really?
And that just keeps the moisture in there, and that pressure, you know, just kind of forces that germination a little faster.
Wow. Wow. I had two thoughts on here. One is tips for people that are just starting, and tips for, you know, folks that are a little more advanced. I'm getting all of it. That's really, like, it'd be fun, like, to even just to try half a row with our carrots to put a 2x4 on and see it. Now, how long do you, I mean, obviously you got to.
Carrots take about 10 to 14 days to germinate.
Yep.
You know, and so, like, with even with the 2x4 method, I would think that you still need to go through and water them every couple days.
Sure.
But, like, with beets and radishes, you know, if you water them real good when you do the planting of the seeds,
yeah,
you're usually pretty good for them to germinate. But the carrots, I learned, like, you got to soak them.
Yeah, interesting. My wife won't let me do a whole lot of radishes anymore because I love them. But she's like, nobody eats them but you. And so she...
Well, here's a little trick. And I never even thought about before, but you can roast radishes like you do potatoes.
Really?
And they taste very much like a potato, and they're less starchy, less calories.
Say that louder, because she'll definitely want to hear that.
And it knocks the heat right out of them.
Huh.
Yep.
Wow. Because we do potatoes. Joe, what's Joe's last name? Joe
Grzowski?
Yeah.
Yep.
Gives us potatoes every year. And we've only been doing them for 3 years, but it'd be interesting to try radishes. They got to be like a little red potato kind of thing if you roast them.
Yeah, and the nice thing about radishes is, like, from seeding to harvesting, it's 28 days.
Oh, really? It is. It's quick, isn't it?
And that's why, like, radishes, like, when it comes to, like, farm marketing, not super, super profitable, but they are popular. And, again, they're ready in 28 days, so you can flip that bed, you know, within a month's time. And then, again, back to the intensive farming on this micro-farming scale, that's kind of the point. Like, most of my crops are, you know, quick generating to harvest, so I can flip that bed.
Yeah.
You know, peppers, tomatoes, those are the kind of, you know, when you put them in there, that's going to be there all summer.
Yeah.
Where with your lettuce, radishes, beets, carrots, you know, within 30, 60 days. Carrots are closer to 90 days, but you still have time to use that bed in the summertime, you know, to put something else in.
And beets are that quick, too.
Yeah, beets are, so radishes, 28 to 30 days. Beets, about 55 to 60 days. And carrots are 75 to 90.
Hmm. I never would have thought beets would be that quick, too.
Yeah, they're pretty quick. And tell you what, I grew beets last year. Took them to the farmer's market, and I was shocked how popular they were.
Really?
Yeah, because I always kind of thought of beets as people are like, I don't like beets. And there are people that don't like beets, but there are people who love them, and they pickle them. Like, I had, you know, a woman, you know, buy a couple bushel of them so she could pickle them all.
Wow. Huh. So before we get into, you know, taking them to market or taking them, you know, to local restaurants, that kind of thing, I want to hit peppers once. Okay. So what are you growing for peppers?
So obviously I have the bell peppers, and I do green, red, yellow, and orange of those.
Okay.
Three different colors. And this year for hot peppers, I scaled it back a little bit, so I'm only doing jalapenos, habaneros, banana peppers, and the cherry peppers.
So no ghost peppers or pepper X or any of that stuff.
No, it's the problem with that is that there's not a real market for that.
Right.
And even with like a ghost pepper or a Carolina Reaper, like you only need one.
Yeah.
Right. You dehydrate that, grind it up. You know, if you really want to spice it up, because 1 year I did a couple ghost pepper plants and a couple of the Carolina Reapers, and basically end up throwing most of them out because they're just too hot to really do anything with, unless somebody was going to make, you know, some killer hot sauce. Like, they're useless.
My younger son absolutely loves heat. I mean, he uses them, uses all kinds of hot sauces, making his barbecue sauce. He does a lot of smoking of meats and stuff. And, So we've always grown some jalapeno and some banana peppers. Bananas don't really have a lot of heat to them, but and really jalapeno don't either. But according to him, so we've always done some, and they love like the pepper poppers, venison pepper poppers. Yeah. They'll make, but he's got it in his head this year. He wants to do a fourth bed, raised bed in the garden, and just do peppers. He wants all his hot peppers and all that stuff. He makes salsa and all that kind of thing. So
yeah, you know, and I've made salsa and dehydrated my peppers, mm-hmm. and things like that. It's a, you know, it's a great use of being able to grow some of your own food, yep. not buy it from the supermarket, and who knows what other chemicals are in there, right, and whatnot. Right. And I say go for it. But yeah. you know, like I said, you probably only need, you know, one ghost pepper plant.
Right.
You know. and that's kinda how I do it. You know, I have twice as many jalapenos as I do habaneros.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because jalapenos are much more popular and
yeah.
There's more uses for them, right? The habaneros, again, they're right at that level of like, are they almost too hot to use, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we do, I don't remember if it's jalapeno or habanero, but we'll cut some up and put them in our, like our stewed tomatoes when we can.
Yeah.
Just because we know, okay, we're going to use it in chili anyways, and this will give a little bit of spice, but not too much.
Yeah, so. Well, it's probably the jalapeno, because yeah. habaneros, and the worst part about habaneros is they actually taste good. They have a citrusy, fruity flavor to them. But if you're not a spicy eater, like, you know, yeah. people can't handle them.
Wow. So the green pepper, this was a myth I grew up with. You grow the green pepper. If you grow it longer, does it turn red and then turn yellow?
Yes. I believe all green peppers eventually turn color if you leave them long enough. Don't quote me on this because I might be making it up, but I'm pretty sure there's no such thing as just a green pepper. They're just harvested early.
Huh.
I do think if you leave them long enough, they'll turn red, because jalapenos turn red too
yeah,
if you leave yep. them long enough. So,
but you're planting red and green and yellow
and orange, yeah,
and the orange, and they're all they're not just a green pepper though.
Right, they all start out green.
Okay.
Yep, and that's why you have to label them,
okay.
because you know, sometimes my mom will go out there and pick my red peppers that are still green. I'd be like, what are you doing? It's not red yet. Well, I didn't know.
I have that's interesting, because I didn't know, is it a different seed or is it you've just left them on longer? And
yeah, I believe like most of your green peppers will eventually turn red if you leave them long enough.
Yeah, and they won't rot. They'll just,
right.
it seems, you know, because we've had some that we've left on the vine for a long time or on the plant, and like it's not changing, I guess.
Well, so like last year, had a real hard time waiting for peppers to change color.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm looking at where I planted the yellow and orange and red peppers, and they were all still green at the end of August, which yep. is not normal. And it's my suspicion, based on what I've heard from other people, it was because of all the smoke.
Mm.
Like it was not getting enough, you know, sun units or to change color.
Wow. We had a fantastic pepper crop though last year. Like I had plants, and we rarely have this, where I've picked them, the peppers, and we got another round out of them. I mean, yeah. I don't know what the difference was last year, but our peppers did really, really well.
Yeah, my peppers weren't as great last year. I started them indoors too soon.
Mm-hmm.
The plants were a little big and leggy when I transplanted them, and they just wanted to fall over, you mm-hmm. know, and I had to stake them up and, you know, keep them off the ground. But they yeah. just, yeah. So I learned my lesson that you can start plants too early.
Yeah, yeah. And beans, when we've done beans, it feels like they, like they'll all of a sudden all of them are ready, and if you go too long on beans, they're not good.
Yeah, and beans is another one that's really quick to, you know, from planting to harvest. Yeah, and what I would recommend to people if you're going to have a garden is to create a game plan of when you're going to plant stuff and do successions of them.
Hmm.
You know, especially with your lettuce, beans, carrots, radishes and beets and things like that. You know, plant a row every 2 or 3 weeks, yeah, and then you'll have fresh produce all summer long.
Yeah, we're guilty of that, where we, okay, today we're going to plant the garden, and you just plant the whole thing in one shot.
Yeah, and then everything's ready at one time, and you can't use it all.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you've done too much, and then you get busy in the summertime, and it gets overgrown. You know, there's, you know, fruit, there's vegetables that you didn't harvest in time, and that goes to, you know,
yeah,
you know, like, especially things like lettuce, when it starts to bolt, you don't want to eat that. It's very bitter.
Right, right.
You know.
And then do you hand weed everything? You were talking about getting ahead on the weeding.
Yeah, it's pretty much, it's all hand weeding. Okay. We have some tools that help with that, so you don't have to, you know, get on your hands and knees.
But you're not using like an herbicide no, or anything like that?
No, we don't use any chemicals like that.
Good.
No herbicides, no insecticides. You know, the way I look at it, you know, if a bug eats a little bit of your vegetables, then you know it's probably good.
Yeah.
Because if you're spraying it with poison and the bugs don't want to eat it, then you probably shouldn't eat it either.
That's true. We had problems with our potatoes in town getting the Colorado copper beetle or whatever it is. And that people are suggesting of how to get them. Well, you could kill them this way or that way with chemicals. And the best advice we were given was, we'll switch locations. So we moved them out here this year, didn't have a problem. Well, we start getting the bugs here, then we'll move them back to town, kind of thing.
Yep. So that's a really good, you know, technique, is to make sure that you're not planting them very close to where you planted them before.
Yeah.
And it, really the only thing you can do with those, if you're not going to use chemicals, is once or twice a week, you got to walk the rows and go through every plant, turn over every leaf, and when you see the orange little eggs on there, you just squish them.
Squish them, yeah.
Yep. Wow. And then, you know, if you do see ones that have developed into the actual beetle, you know, just squish them.
It sounds like a lot of work.
It is, but, you know, if you don't want to use chemicals, that's your only alternative, because they will destroy it.
They'll take it all.
And it only takes a couple of days. Yep. Once it gets infested, you'll go out there 2 or 3 days later and, like, there's not a leaf on your potato plant.
Yeah. Do you do potatoes?
Yeah.
Okay, you do. Yeah, it seems like this is a pretty good area for potatoes. Obviously, with Wise potato chips and all this stuff, it seems like the ground is pretty good for it here.
But. Yeah, I think so. We've had a lot of luck with potatoes and, mm-hmm. You know, usually end up more than we can actually end up eating.
Yeah. You know? And the storage, that's tough too, with, you know.
Because it's got to be the right temperature. You know, if you think you're going to store it in your basement and your basement's 60, 65 degrees, they're going to start sprouting.
Sprouting, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the temperature's good with ours, but there again, the moisture, that it, I think, plays an impact there. But.
Yeah. Well, eventually, like for me, hopefully I'm going to be able to invest in a large-scale cooler, or convert mm-hmm. part of the farm into a cooler where, you know, I can have that kind of legitimate storage where I can keep it at, you know, 40 degrees, 45 degrees or whatever it needs to be.
Yeah. When you harvest out of, like, thinking out of the high tunnel, then do you gather up the rest of the plant and do compost with that then too?
Yep. Yep. All the garden scraps go into the compost.
Yeah. We've been doing more and more of that. Like I've got a little tray that I keep on the kitchen counter. You know, we're cutting mushroom stems we were doing steaks the other night and put them over there, or the heads and tails of onions or whatever. And then we put it out in a compost area, and I go out every week or two with the tractor and just turn it over, and eventually we'll put it in the garden.
Yeah. I try to compost pretty much all of my kitchen scraps. Eggshells, coffee grinds, you know, like you said, everything that's, you know, everything that you cut off the ends of carrots, things like that, all of that. But the only thing with compost, you know, you don't want to compost anything oily or fatty. Mm-hmm. You know, bones can be composted. I don't do that because of my dog.
Yeah.
She will find them and make a mess of my compost pile.
Yeah. We had, I don't know who put them in there, but we did a clam bake one time out here, and somebody put all the clam shells in there. So now they've been in there for probably 2 years. They haven't decomposed.
Yeah,
so.
they probably won't break down.
No.
But eggshells will. They get soft, and they'll eventually break down. You know, you can compost like leftover bread and, mm-hmm. and grains and things like that. The only thing I would warn about that is those kind of things will normally attract critters like raccoons or possums yeah. and things like that. So depending on your location, you know, like with us on the farm, not a big deal for me to throw leftover bread in the compost. Mm-hmm. But if it was a compost pile outside of my house, I probably wouldn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. All right, so a year ago, you said, okay, I've got this severance package. It was a little bit more than a year ago now.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna make a run of this. So then you went out and you connected with not only the farm market, but a whole bunch of restaurants as well, right?
Yep, yeah. So sold to a couple of restaurants, yeah.
So what did that look like? How did that?
So the way that worked for me is usually at the beginning of the week, like on a Monday, because mm-hmm. that's when restaurants normally place their orders, I would shoot the text messages out to the restaurants, let them know what I had available
yep.
in the pricing. And then they would just reply back, yep, I want, 20 pounds of lettuce, 5 pounds of carrots, a tray of microgreens or whatever. And then Thursdays was usually my delivery day. Mm-hmm. And just kind of had that routine. And sometimes you could get yourself in a little bit of trouble because you send out like, hey, I got all these cherry tomatoes and they all want 10 pounds. And it's like, I don't know if I have 50 pounds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So how do you balance that then? Do you have to go back and say, I didn't have quite that much?
That was going to be the plan. I never had to have that conversation. I got lucky where, you know, I did end up having enough, you mm-hmm. know. And if I did, most of them either work with multiple places or I was just supplementing them anyway. So mm-hmm. if I came to them on Thursday and was like, yep, it's only 8 pounds of cherry tomatoes, probably would be fine.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Did, like I know, and maybe it's just me, but there's something about locally sourced vegetables or food in general. Did you find that to be true?
Yeah, I think so. I think the vibe is more and more people are looking to support and buy locally.
Yeah.
I think, you know, at the farmer's market, what I kind of discovered is people think it's fun mm-hmm. to buy from a local farmer.
Right.
And it's fun to go to the farmer's market and see, like, the different products. And especially with mine, you know, I didn't just stick with the standard peppers, tomatoes, onions, lettuce, you know, like,
right.
you know, mine has a lot of variety. Like, yeah. I had multiple colors of broccoli, or I mean, of cauliflower. Like, I had purple and orange and green.
Really?
You know, same with, like, onions and, you know, I have, you know, not just white onions out. I had yellow and red and I have shallots and... Mm-hmm.
And these new cherry tomatoes.
I think they're going to be a hit.
Yeah.
Because people had asked about them.
Yep.
Like, oh, do you do these kind? And I was like, oh, I can do that. But yeah, I try to bring that variety and bring things. You know, I had yellow beets and mm-hmm. black radishes, things like that that people have never had before.
Really?
And they were very curious to try them.
Yeah. Do they taste different? That would be the question.
The black radish is really peppery. Like that's hot.
Yeah.
So you got to be a radish fan to eat those.
Hmm.
And then like the yellow beets, they're just had a sweeter taste and less earthy taste than like a regular red beet.
Huh. Do they pickle those as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Do you, if you're selling the way, like at a farmer's market, or if you're selling to a restaurant, are there FDA regulations or anything like that?
No, not when it comes to vegetables. There's basically no regulation, no rules really at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's part of me is feeling like that's pretty cool. And then part of me feels like, well, what if you get an outbreak of, I don't know, it's not salmonella. What would you get? A listeria or something like that?
E. coli.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that could happen, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and like for me, like I was very, very conscious of when I would harvest and handle the vegetables, like yeah. always wearing rubber gloves, things like that. You know, just to make sure, like, I don't want to be that guy that's like, oh, yeah, I got his lettuce and now, you know, I'm in the hospital.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and it's weird. The agricultural rules are strange. You know, for example, like, I can't butcher a cow and sell you the meat, right? It has to go to a USDA certified butcher.
Yep.
But I could cut up a chicken
yeah.
and sell it to you.
Yeah.
And a chicken's way dirtier than a cow. Yeah. So, you know, at some point, somebody in the beef industry was like, hey, let's create a law, you know, yeah. I'll pay off my congressman to
yep.
create this law that, so, you know, local beef producers can't butcher their own meat.
Yeah. I know this is way off kind of topic, but I just read that I think there's four main butchering or meat processors out west, and a whole bunch of farmers, you know, got together and said, we're going to build our own. You know, they put in money, and because these other four are kind of monopolizing it, and they've...
Yeah, because, I mean, what is it? It's Purdue, Tyson, Cargill. I don't know, what's the other one? But you're right. There's only, you know, our food supply is controlled by like four or five companies.
Yeah.
And then they're all, you know, have investors from, you know, BlackRock? Mm-hmm. What's the other one? The other big investor companies. But I mean, if you go up the chain,
yeah.
like everything in the supermarket is basically owned by the same three companies.
Yeah.
And even the stuff you think is local or mom and pop, you know, eventually, you know, Procter & Gamble bought that. Huh. And you just don't know it. You're still thinking you're getting, what is it, Dr. Bronner soap, mm-hmm. right? It's supposed to be the clean soap that people went crazy for 20 years ago.
Yep.
Pretty sure that's owned by... like the same people that make Tide.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's when you go to the farmer's market, if I go and I buy vegetables directly from you, now I know, okay, one, it's grown locally, and two, I know the farmer who, mm-hmm. who grew it. Like that, to me, seems like it fits in with the overall vibe that we're seeing currently with people saying, well, I want to be more local. I want to be more organic. I want to be more like, there seems to be a move towards that.
I think so. I think there's a backlash. I think there more and more people are waking up to realize that like most of the food in the grocery store is junk.
Yep.
You know, and they want to start eating healthy, yeah. healthier. You know, and I think so. It's just the vibe I get from people when you talk to them. They get real excited about it. And, you know, it just seems like more and more people are like, oh, yeah, you know, I get all my stuff at the farmer's market all summer long. I can't wait for it to open. And, yeah. and I definitely think there's more a movement there. And,
yeah.
and the thing is, for the most part, you know, my prices are competitive with Wegmans.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, it's not like I'm charging three times
right,
what Wegmans
right.
charges, you know. So it's still pretty affordable. And I think that's also... something that people don't realize is that the stuff that you get from a farmer's market is not that much more expensive than yeah. Wegmans.
And sometimes it's cheaper. Yeah. It can be. We've seen a little bit of that move too, even in the hunting world, where people are like, they're meat eaters. They want to learn that self-sustainability or self-sufficiency, and they want organic meat, and they want to be a part of the process. And
yeah.
I think that carries over as well into
yeah. I think it's a similar phenomenon yeah. for sure.
Yeah. yeah, I love it. Although you know, it means at least in the hunting community that you gotta start accepting some people that you wouldn't normally think you know like yeah because they're but if you don't then hunting's gonna go away you know
yeah anyway, yeah so. Yeah that's the thing you need you yeah. know, people to be into. Hunting to keep hunting
that's right
going right so
yep. In terms of vegetables so I love to cook I'm not a great cook I've never been trained but I like to create meals that kind of thing and my son Charlie does as well my wife she cracks me up she's like well I'll just get this it's cheaper at Aldi's I'm like oh no we need fresh whatever it is, the fresh vegetables, or we need fresh. Can't we just use like a bag of frozen peas? Nope. Because there is, to me, such a difference in the taste.
Yeah.
Fresh vegetables, you can tell the difference.
I can tell you right now, like I never ate beets, carrots, you know, things like that where mm-hmm. I just did not like them until I started growing myself and realized like, oh, this is what it's supposed to taste like, you yeah. know, it's so much better.
Yep, yep. And then when you get through the season, okay, what do I, you know, how do I make this last longer? And that's where you start getting into canning or, you know, she'll do now where she, I think she barely blanches the tomatoes and then freezes them whole. And then we'll, I don't know what she does with them, cans them. I think when she blanches them, the skin comes off easily.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but she's not even really canning them. It's a much easier process than what she was doing before. I think that's what she does. She blanches and pulls the skin and then freezes them on a tray and puts them in a bag in the freezer. And then we, you know, we'll use frozen tomatoes for pasta or whatever all winter long. And we've got carrots that, you know, we've sliced and diced carrots and peppers and all of that stuff. Of course, now you got to buy another freezer and you got, but it's, but you're still getting fresh, you know.
Yeah. And you're going to save money. Like if you use the stuff, like, you know, I know a lot of people do canned stuff and freeze stuff and then it just sits there and then they don't use it. But yeah. And I think, you know, like some of the stuff we're talking about here, if people are listening in the podcast and it gives them, you know, inspiration or tips to grow some of their own food, like I really recommend that. Like, you know, maybe not try to go full homestead where you're growing all of your stuff, but like do a couple pepper plants and broccoli and tomatoes and, you know, at least eat some of your own homegrown food. And, you know, it's very rewarding.
That's the,
when you're, you know, especially with me, like, because I have chickens and we have beef cows and, you know, you basically make your meal and, you know, almost 100% of it came from your own labor in your own farm. And it's like, yep, this whole entire meal is mine.
Yeah. We can do this. Like if the world goes to crap, we can do this. Have you ever thought about like any kind of fruit stuff?
Well, we do have some raspberry bushes. So we'll pick the raspberries and we sell those. I have a pear tree and an apple tree. My mom will can some of the pears. We have some canned pears, and she's made, you know, pies out of the apple tree. But not really pushing that as far as something that we sell on a consistent basis.
Yeah, that's a whole nother whole nother world. We have three apple trees because I wanted enough to be able to get an apple pie every year. And with the spongy moth or the gypsy moths that we had, the, you know, 2 years ago, those trees were – they didn't produce for – 2 years. And then last year we had a bumper crop and it was Jackie made applesauce and apple pies. And we'd grab an apple on our way to the woods every day. It was really,
It was a good year. My apple tree was that was probably the most apples I'd ever seen on it.
Do you do, and this is going to come off as probably an odd question, but do you do any beekeeping?
No, but I've thought about it.
Because you need the pollinators, right?
For all this stuff. Right, because I think it's a companion thing that you can do. I think once I don't have to work the 40-hour job, like when the kids are bigger and, you know, the bills aren't as much, that'll be something I'll get into.
Yeah. We have a guy that Creative Habitat, and he sells seeds. So we put in a lot of wildflower seeds in our food plots and to encourage bees and butterflies and that kind of thing. And he's gotten into beekeeping the last few years and is doing seminars. And so we're going to have him on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because Charlie's he's like, I want to do bees. I want to try bees. It's the last thing I want is to get stung. I don't mind that they're out there, but I don't want to. Like, no. They're really docile.
For the most part, you don't have to worry about getting stung. But yeah, I mean, it'd be cool, you know, to do that, because then, you know, we could jar the honey and sell that as well, which, you know, at our farm stand, we do sell honey, but it's not ours. We buy it and then resell it.
Okay.
But it's popular, so it's out there.
So everybody goes to your farm stand for your lettuce.
Yeah.
That is the thing that everybody goes after, at least in town. That's what everybody talks about.
Yeah. So. Once you have the fresh lettuce, you know, we pick a couple times a week. So when you buy lettuce, it's a maximum a day old.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to Wegmans and you buy lettuce, it's minimum 14 days old, if not more.
Yeah. When will your stand open up for that stuff?
I'm hoping maybe next weekend.
Really? That soon?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, my goal has always been to try to get the stand open by April 15th, but we still hasn't haven't been able to hit that. So, but
wow,
yeah.
I figured end of May.
No, because we'll have lettuce. I'll have asparagus. I'll have rhubarb, and of course, you know, we'll be selling the honey and the eggs, and there'll be enough to put out there. We'll be busy. Microgreens, I can do microgreens in 10 days.
Wow. And is it all by trust? Like, people put money in the box and you hope that they're honest.
Yep. There's a little cash box there. And you know, I'm sure people have, you know, shorted us. But then there's people who pay extra, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when what they buy is $4 and they only have a $5 bill, they just leave the $5 bill.
Leave the $5. Yeah. Do you guys do corn? Does your dad do?
Yeah, we do sweet corn as well. Yep.
Okay. We do a corn day every, like the end of August, where we'll get 3 or 4 bushels of corn and we'll boil them all in like a turkey fryer, and then we'll get that corn, we'll get it off the cob and freeze it. And,
yep.
I love real fresh corn. And then if I can't have it fresh, I love it where we've made it and put it out there. You know, yep. Thanksgiving, there's corn and squash and stuff that we've grown. And yeah. Good.
Yeah, we do all that too, the squash and the pumpkins. And
man, are you sure you don't have enough to do to keep you busy full time, Tim? That's crazy.
Well, it's one of those things where you know, what I kind of discovered was I was too busy working in the business of the micro farm to work on the business.
Interesting.
So my mistake was, you know, I probably should have gone to the bank and got a loan, got an employee or two, you know, grew even more than I was growing because you'd have the help.
Yep.
And then I would have time to market,
yeah,
you know, go to more restaurants, go to multiple farmers markets and bring in more income.
Yeah.
That's really probably what I should have done. But, you know, I kind of, you know, I felt like, you know, I can do all this myself. Like, you know, I got all day long to do it, you know, and, you know, and it was fun. And I would say probably somewhere around September, I felt a little bit of burnout, but, you know, for the most part, you know, we get to be outside all day long, you know, like that's kind of perfect. And you're doing physical labor. Like, so, you know, at the end of the day, like you know, when you're eating dinner, you deserved it.
Yep.
You know, when you're sitting behind a desk all day long, you probably didn't earn that meal.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah. Yeah. I've mentioned, had him on, you know, multiple times, my daughter and her fiance, and they're both are like, wow, if we could do anything, it would be to quit our jobs. And like, you know, she wants to be a stay at home chicken mom, and, you know, she's planting, ordering seeds for her garden. And he, you know, Jake would love to do all of that stuff. And it's just, you know, on a small scale, it's not feasible like it used to be.
And it is feasible. There are many, you know, micro farms, small scale farms out there that are doing it. Now they're bigger than me, where I was working with, you know, a quarter to a half an acre. They're closer to probably like, you know, 2 or 3 acres worth of land that they're working. But they go to multiple farmers markets, and they're, you know, not that far from New York City or Nashville or someplace like that, where, you know, where I was selling my beets for $3 a bunch, you know, they're probably getting 7 or 8, you know, because of just the different market dynamics.
Yeah, you're selling to people with money as opposed to, you know, people who are just looking for a good deal on beets.
Yeah, you know, and then, of course, they'll be working with, you know, 25 restaurants instead of 5.
Yeah.
You know, and that's ultimately what we'd have to get up to, is going to, you know, 3 or 4 farmers markets a week, you know, getting to 15, 20 restaurants on a consistent basis, you know, that kind of scale.
And you're at the Perry Farm Market.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I'm not going to do it this year. I'm not going to have time. So like I said, this year it's going to be a little bit of a peel back, kind of a reset, and, you know, but I'm hoping that next year I can return, because the farmer's market's fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but it's fun. I mean, you get to really interact with the customers. You get to see people, and there's regulars,
people
that would come every single week, you know, you have a conversation with them, you start to get to know them, And it is fun. You know, it's there's a lot of energy to it.
Was last year the only year you did it?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So my daughter ran it the 2 years prior to that. Okay. So she must have just missed you.
Yeah. I heard they're looking for a farmer's market manager again this year.
Yeah, I think so. They usually have a high school student do it. And she ended up hiring somebody to help her part time. And it's a lot. I mean, it's a big job for a single high school kid. So
yeah, the kid they had last year was pretty good, but yeah, he had a buddy that had to help him out because like I said, it's a lot, you know, when all the farmers come in at, you know, 7 a.m. at the same time, directing traffic, make sure they're finding the right spot and pulling into the right spot. And of course helping them out, like, getting the tents set up and things like that. Yeah.
And he'd have to map it out. And every, you know, there's inevitably there'd be somebody like, well, I was in the back last week. I didn't want to be up front. And
or somebody doesn't show up. You don't want to have a blank spot. So you got to move somebody call somebody last minute. Like, hey, can you come?
Yeah.
You know, cause I do believe they have a few vendors that are on standby. That's like, hey, we got a spot open.
I think so. So he trained up under Rachel. He was the one that worked part time with her. So well, where can people find you? Like, where, if they're interested in knowing more or seeing what you're up to?
So I'm on Facebook. It's Paz Produce. We're on Instagram. I think it's Paz Produce Official on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I try to post, like, when I do harvesting and doing some things. Been a little bit lazy about it lately, but once we start getting plants in the ground and start doing stuff, I'll start posting more. And I would like to get into doing a little bit more video content, like the Instagram Reels. Mm-hmm. I just don't really know how to do that stuff.
Yeah, you and me both. But I can put the links in at least to your pages on the when I post the podcast, and so people will be able to find you. So
yeah, eventually, like, hopefully to have a website, and I would like to have like an online store. Mm-hmm. Where people could place orders and then come to the farmer's market or have a day on the farm that you can come pick up your orders.
Yeah.
I think that would be neat to for the future.
Yeah. You know, COVID brought a whole bunch of that kind of stuff, right? Like the curbside pickup I don't know if it's Grubhub or where you can have somebody do your grocery shopping and then.
Yeah, the Instacart.
Instacart. That's what I'm trying to.
Yeah, COVID forced a lot of these small farmers to do that, to set up a website, have an online store, because, you know, farmers markets were closed or limited. And
yeah, that's pretty ingenious, actually, to think, you know, if you can capitalize on that. And in certain marketplaces, it probably does better than others, but in certain markets.
But. Yeah, and I think, you know, people have the CSA model for that kind of stuff, where doing an online store kind of is best of both worlds, right? Like with the CSAs, you know, each week you get a box of vegetables and, you know, it might have okra or something in it. And if you don't eat okra, like, it's kind of a waste, right? You know, where if you had this online store, almost like a CSA membership where you get, you buy certain units, right? And you get 10 units a week and, okay, lettuce is 2 units and broccoli's a unit. Like, you could spend your money on what you want each week to pick it up instead of just getting a box of whatever was random.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that could help in terms of, okay, if we're going to charge this for the year for a CSA membership, right? Now you know what your income is, whatever they decide to buy, at least you're able to count on, okay, this is the income for the.
Yeah. That's the main driver for doing a CSA, because you get all that influx of cash in January, and that helps pay for things throughout the year.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess I just had never put that together, that all those CSA boxes come from somebody. Might as well be you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. People have asked us about doing that, and it's just, again, maybe down the road. Mm-hmm. But again, I think I would want to do mine a little bit different, like I said, where, you know, you buy units. And then you get to pick what you want.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, you'd have to have it set up where you plug it in there. You say, okay, we got 50 heads of broccoli. The first 50 people to pick broccoli, they get it. If you're 51, I guess you're back to okra.
Yeah. And you can't, we're sorry, broccoli's done. And at the end of August, you can't order it in October kind of
thing. Well, you can, because broccoli, you can do a second season on that.
Well, come up with something else. But you know what I mean, right? Like,
but yeah, like once the tomatoes are done, they're all done. And now it's, okay, now you're getting, you know.
Or pumpkins, right?
You're getting
pumpkins are just in the fall.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, cool. Tim, this is awesome. This was a great conversation.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. This is my podcast debut.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty excited about doing it. This is just the first, I think. We might have to revisit during harvest time. And
yeah, I'll definitely come back.
Yeah, this was, I learned a ton. And I'm going to have to go back and just take notes. I was taking notes for a while, and I thought, oh, I need to listen, because there's some really good stuff in here, so.
Right. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, and I'll be sure to get Paws Produce official up, and I'll make sure I tag the links, and so you'll get all that. So, all right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a good night.
Good night.